This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Opti4 Integrated Wealth Management. This is your host, Les Smolin, and my co-host is Joe Applebaum of Potomac Companies. We have a great lineup of guests for you today on our show, including Rebecca Rubin, founder, president, and CEO of Marstel Day, LLC, Elizabeth Wilder, CEO and president, Anthony Wilder, Design Build, John Sneddon, president, Rockland's Barbecue and Grilling Company, and Alan Strauss, managing partner, Startfinder. First up is Rebecca Rubin. Rebecca, what is Marstel Day?
Well, Marstel Day today is a 130-person environmental consulting firm that operates nationwide. And the name means Mar for the ocean, Stel for the stars or constellations, and Day for the daylight.
And when did you go to work for them?
Well, I started the company myself personally.
When did you do that?
Back in 2002, one desk, one person, one issue. It was a very lonely time, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. And so it's been about 12 years since inception.
And so what is it about this work that attracts you?
Well, it's desperately needed. Let's start with that. The environment, of course, is in danger. There's all kinds of issues around water and water resources, forests and forest protection, and climate resilience. And, of course, that's where we're operating.
And why is that important to you?
Well,
personally,
I think it's important to have a livable planet, and I think in theory most people would agree with that. It's harder to put it into practice every day.
Yeah. So where does this theme resonate for you? How young were you when you started to realize that the environment was an important part of your world, your life?
Oh, I was a young lass traipsing the hills and streams in my hometown of Hastings on Hudson, New York, on the Hudson River. Mm-hmm. And I actually grew up across the street from the woods on a street called Edgewood at the intersection of Edgewood and Sunset, and went to...
You're emphasizing Edgewood in here.
Edgewood, that's right. And it should have been my first sign. Went to Hillside Elementary School. So nature was certainly a part of my upbringing.
Uh-huh. Brothers and sisters growing up?
I have an older sister, Jennifer, and older brother Brian. They are both doctors.
So they're both doctors. What was mom and dad doing?
Mom and dad then, as now, are both in theater as their profession.
So there's this interesting confluence of different professional venues and tracks that you all followed. The traditional medical track that your sisters did. Your parents are in theater on the production side or on the acting side?
Voice, movement, and stage lighting.
Interesting. Where does your, where do you fit in all that? How does that come about?
Well, I think I'd like to think that it marries up the passion on the theater side of the house with the discipline on the medical profession.
What do you mean by that?
Bringing the two together, it takes both. I mean, to run a company and to be very committed to environmental issues, you have to care, and that passion needs to come from someplace, and you have to be unafraid to show it. But you also have to have a certain amount of discipline and rigor and vigilance in how you operate every day.
Mm-hmm. What were you like as a kid?
I'm sure that I was highly entertaining. I was very much a loner. I was definitely the kid who disappeared into the woods all day until mom yodeled for me to come home in the evening. I enjoyed, as you might imagine, everything that had to do with the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. So you say you're a loner, and I think there's a perception out there that loners don't necessarily go out and start their own businesses. So how do you explain that?
I suspect that's not quite accurate. I think that the reality is there's business leaders of all kinds. Some are shy and retiring. Some are very out there, and there's everything in between. I think what's helpful in being a loner is that it is actually lonely at the top. And for me, that's pretty normal. So, this makes sense to me.
So, Rebecca, you started a for-profit business. Most environmental organizations tend to be nonprofit. Why for-profit?
I did not want people to have to choose where to place their passion. I thought that it should be acceptable to have your passion and commitment and be able to go either the nonprofit route or the for-profit route.
And I guess in that regard, this isn't about the money for you. Or is it?
I'm sure that it is partly about the money, and it's partly about proving that you can treat nature well and respect nature and make that part of a green business, and that green business needs to be part of a sustainable economy. If nobody does that, then it looks like nature can never be something that's respected by business. So yeah. I think the two go together.
And why you? I mean, of all people, I get the idea that you have this love of the outdoors. You lived, what was it, Edgewood?
Right.
I mean, I get all that, and then I go, but why you? What is it that is the special gift or talent you have that actually makes what you do work?
Well, first let me say there are several me's. There are several Rebecca Rubins. There is a Rebecca Rubin American Doll as part of the American Doll series. There is also...
I'm not familiar with her, so...
Unfortunately, there is also the Rebecca Rubin who is the eco-terrorist Rebecca Rubin, which has plagued me for years in airports. But I think in the final analysis, it's really pretty simple. It's not just me. It's lots of people who are committed to the environment and conservation.
Yeah, but you said something in the green room about, you know, you give a voice to this.
Right.
And your voice is important. When did you realize that, one, it was yours to be, as a child I'm going back to now.
Right.
And that the voice that you were finding, if you will, in yourself, when did that actually start to show up? I get the outdoor nature, but when did it actually hit you that this is something I really want to do and have to do?
Not until much later. There was a very long interregnum in between in which I did lots of other things, variously. I mean, I've been an historical interpreter. I've been a defense analyst. I've run other organizations. But 12 or 13 years ago, just prior to the founding of the company, I was visiting military bases and looking at them as natural sanctuaries and realizing that if someone didn't protect them, they would probably be developed. And was able to work in concert with the Department of Defense to write a new law that now allows those bases to be transferred for wildlife conservation in perpetuity.
What is it that makes you so proud of that law that you helped pass?
It makes a statement on behalf of nature. It also shows the practicality of solutions that you can bring to the world of sustainable business.
Mm-hmm. And that's important to you.
I think it's important to show that we can work together with nature, yes.
Good. Joe, I'm sorry. Did you have a question
you
can ask there?
No.
Take us back a little bit. Have no idea what it's like sitting around the table with your parents and your sisters. So give us a flavor for what was the conversation at the dinner table there?
Well, our parents were very liberal in the sense of allowing us to take the conversation wherever we wanted it to go. They were also permitted us to do things like read at the dinner table if we felt like it. My parents, although very similar in nature, although I'm not sure they would agree with that, came from very different sort of religious as opposed to spiritual upbringings. And so the one thing that was missing at the dinner table was always talk of religion, because there was no way that anyone could agree on anything. So we were sort of left to our own devices to figure that out. But they were very passionate in their own way about the theater. So there was a lot of talk about what they were doing in theater at the time. And if we had essays or things we had written as children that we were proud of, they encouraged us to bring them home and read them out loud.
So that dinner table talk, or lack of that one area of religion, how did that impact you and your business, and how did it impact your brother and your sister?
Right. I think it has had a tendency to make all of us very open-minded. We don't go into anything with prejudgment. I think there is a lot of consideration for alternative points of view and an acceptance of a wide range of views.
So how does that affect your management style? You have 129 other people.
Right. So it fits well in the following sense. Sustainability, which of course is what we're about, it's certainly about being environmentally friendly, that is, not depleting nature's resources, but it's also about social equity It's about coming forward without prejudice in your business. And both of those are key ingredients to sustainability, as is the third leg of that stool, which is economic feasibility.
Mm-hmm. Some theme that keeps coming up here, and I'm hearing in what Joe just asked and how you responded previously, is this notion of tolerance. The discourse is acceptable. It's not necessarily a right or wrong always, but everybody has a voice. So if I was going into your company and I asked them the one thing that seems to be the trait that you bring there that they admire most, what is it that you carry forward from your childhood and now?
Well, I hope they would say good judgment.
Good judgment. What does that got to do with running a business, if you will?
I think it goes to the thing you just said about tolerance. I think that to have good judgment and to be able to really listen and understand everyone's point of view equally, you need to be tolerant of what it is they have to say.
Good. What would your mom say about your success today and what you're doing?
She would say, and she has said, I'm so proud of you. Both my parents have been, I think exceptionally proud, maybe a little surprised at my choice of pathways, but certainly very proud.
And Dad?
My father would probably say, I didn't know you had it in you.
Really?
But, yeah. I mean, I think he maybe would have thought I would have gone a more bookish route.
So he had maybe a different design in his mind of what he thought was perhaps best for you?
Never. I think not so much he had a design of what was best for me, but perhaps an impression of who I am as a person and where that might take me. And so he might be surprised to see me, as a company leader.
Well, I'm sure he's very proud of what you've done there. Rebecca, what's the website?
www.marstel-day.com.
I'd like to thank my co-host, Joe Applebaum of, Applebaum of the Potomac Companies, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Gary Short, sales manager of Nickelock, Virginia and North Carolina. Gary, who is your perfect client? What are they looking for at Nickelock?
Our clients are between 35 and 65, 85% women, 15% men, looking to expand the outdoor living areas in their backyard usually.
What do the clients that come to you appreciate most about your work at Nickelock?
Well, what they really like is our products, because we're a family-owned company. We manufacture a product that has an unheard-of lifetime guarantee.
What is it?
Paving stones and retaining walls.
Awesome.
And what they like about it is that we have 22 different colors, so let your mind be an open palette of color in your backyard. We can match everything that you want to do.
Do you all install it as well?
We don't install, but what we do is we have an extremely fine program to come up with the finest certified installers in the region, and they have to have certification, insurance, liability insurance, and pay their taxes as well.
Good thing. Why do you enjoy your work at Nickelock?
You know what? I've always enjoyed people, and I help people get what they want and need in the outside industry, and then I get what I want and need.
So if someone's looking to really do something amazing in their backyard, where do they find you on the web?
Well, my personal web is nicolia.com or gshort@nicolock, nicolock.com. And I respond within 24 hours.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin, with my next guest, John Sneddon, President, Rocklands Barbecue and Grilling Company. John, welcome. John, what is Rocklands Barbecue and Grilling Company?
Rocklands Barbecue and Grilling Company, we are a restaurant group of four brick-and-mortar restaurants. Barbecue is our specialty, and we have a catering business as well.
And how'd you get your job with them?
We got my job with them by, I was the founder, but I say, the chief bottle washer and cook, and it morphed into being a business.
So you're one of the founders of this.
Yes.
And what is it in terms of size? How do you measure size for your business that's relevant for our audience?
Well, we have about 100 and probably 120 employees week to week. Mm-hmm. And in the summer, we add another 120 to 140 who work as 1099 employees for catering.
Interesting. And so do you always did you always want to kind of set out and do this for a living?
You know, it's it was actually a hobby of mine. I was thought I'd set out to
what,
do something
starting
different.
Restaurant groups?
It was, right. The barbecue business was hobby, not the business, but just cooking barbecue was a hobby. And I did it for friends. And when a person that I knew that wasn't a friend, I said, I'll have to charge you for this. Happy to do it. And that party led to another party, which led to another party, and ultimately a business model.
So, I mean, people have different kinds of hobbies. Where did this hobby of barbecuing come from?
You know, I think it was just a pastime. It's growing up, I was from a big family.
How big?
Six kids.
Brothers, and, sisters, where you fit in that?
Five boys, one girl, and I'm in the middle.
Five boys, one girl, and you're in the middle.
In the middle. Number four down on the line.
Uh-huh.
And as a family, we cooked out. Food was a big... it was when we all got together as a family was over meals, and typically one meal, which would be dinner. And because of that, I think we grilled out for some reason. I think just a lot in the summer. My mom didn't want to maybe – our house was not air-conditioned. We live in Philadelphia. Uh-huh. So I think to keep the heat down in the house.
You go outside.
Go outside.
And you grill.
Right. And I gravitated to it. So that was my
– Who was the cook in the family?
Well, my mother is probably where I got my love of cooking, and also my grandmother was very from Ohio, so not fancy, but you know, good food, a lot of TLC.
So when you think back about it, food represents something to you, not just an opportunity to make a living, and perhaps a very good living at that, but it's something more significant, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. It's you know, it's very important on a number of reasons, but it's certainly, as you said, the emotional side. Gathering, I think of it as, I think of food and I think of family. I think of sharing, and I think of a time to be, to relax. Mm-hmm. I think also then food on I won't say more recently, but my wife's very interested in food and nutrition, and realizing, you know, just what you put into your body is very important. It's very, you know, on that point too, really food to me, I think, is there's a lot of trust because it's...
Food and trust?
Food and trust, and that people are trusting us. They put something physically in their body that we are making for them, and that I take very personally.
Those are not things I tend to hear when we talk to other business people. But you've seemed to have been able to kind of corral them, if you will, and build a business around that.
I've been very fortunate. It's from, as you said, from a hobby, and now to be able to build the business. And I think in part, certainly the business, it's with that love that we try and put into our business is why we've been able to grow.
Hmm. So no one in the family had any restaurant experience before that?
No.
What was Dad doing?
No, my dad was an orthopedic surgeon outside of Philadelphia. And my mother is, you would call the traditional housewife.
And if I kind of try and picture what it was like sitting around a dinner table in your family growing up, what was the conversation I would have heard, and what was your contribution to it?
Well... typically, our meals were not at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Typically, it was 8 o'clock or 8:30. My dad, you know, when he got home. Mm-hmm. Having three older brothers, a lot of conversation about sports. Certainly, my dad, you know, talk about what's going on at work and what's going on in the community he was involved with. Mm-hmm. And then certainly a lot of talk about, imagine, as we got a little older, about our social lives and pursuits.
So when you think back, and Dad was an orthopedic surgeon, you said.
Yes.
You didn't have a chance to work with him, is my guess, unless you went the medical route.
No, I didn't, although I did go and do some observations. As kids, having three older brothers, we spent a bit of time at the hospital on the receiving end of treatment from
the broken legs.
Right, a lot of stitches, a lot of broken fingers, broken noses. But I also had, my dad invited me. I had an interest, and did able to go see some surgeries.
Was he preparing you, or did you think you would follow in his footsteps that way?
I think really what I found very attractive is one, working with his hands and very goal-oriented work when someone comes in broken and you fix them. Mm-hmm. And I think also relative to his generation and that model of medicine, which we're seeing disappearing, about being self-employed and really running your own business.
Mm-hmm. So you saw that just in what he was doing.
I did, and I thought also as being able to take your trade wherever you went was very attractive to me.
Portability, I guess we call it now.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that important to you?
Until I just said it now, I knew that I wasn't going to stay in Philadelphia is probably why that was important to me.
You knew you weren't going to stay in Philly because what? What did you have as aspirations and dreams?
I'm not sure I can answer that but I think I probably had a sense I wasn't going to stay in Philadelphia. I liked the idea of travel, I think, and so I thought maybe the medical profession, maybe the real reason is I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do relative to the track that I was on. I wasn't excited about that.
So you kind of veered off the track.
I did.
But you didn't necessarily veer into the restaurant business either.
No, it's one of those things, without experience, you can't get a job. Many people have heard in applying mm-hmm. for a job. And really, through college, I probably applied to 6 different restaurants. Never got a job because I didn't have experience.
So now you're getting your revenge, huh?
Right.
That's interesting. So your first paying job as a young boy was what?
Was doing odd jobs, and I cleared trails for a local association.
You cleared trails?
Horseback riding trails. So when I was 13, my brother and I cleared trails.
Not one of those things I normally imagine people going to. So how did that come about for you?
It was through a family, family association. And my father liked horses. We had horses. So from that there's a gentleman, Sid Thayer, who asked my brother and I if we would do it. He ran an advertising firm, but also had horses and also was, in my life, a mm-hmm. role model and a mentor. That was very influential for me.
What did you learn from him?
From Sid, I think setting goals, kindness, and being empathetic.
So how do those traits show up in how you lead today?
Great question. I would say that... I feel very empathetic. Certainly what we do in the restaurant business is it's not easy work. It's not always, it's very hands-on. Mm-hmm. It's often hot in the kitchens in the summer and cold in the winters.
It can be very trying.
It can be. And we deal with, ideally people are coming in to eat with us. And so you're dealing with a lot of folks who have different experiences before they come in. So you're never quite sure. You don't always have the same not always dealing with the same personality when they come in. So certainly I'm very empathetic with our teams on what they are doing on a daily basis to produce the product that we're trying to do. And certainly relative to the trust component in that we're making food and products that people are putting in their bodies.
Yeah.
A lot of our team have been doing this all their lives, so to trust them to do that and do it in a way that is to a high standard.
It makes me think about a lot of things of what we take for granted about consuming food is for you the business of doing that, and it has a huge impact on people's well-being if you want to think about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Particularly anymore, you hear a lot more about the food chain, and it's very important.
It's a good observation on your point. Something you said earlier to us about your rules oriented.
Right.
So where does that come from?
I would have to credit my father and certainly my mother as well. But my father, I think, having grown up in the Midwest, and I credit a lot of it through the Depression, where I think so it's from my parents, from my father in particular, that there are a certain way to do certain things, and that's the way you did it, and there was the way you were expected to do it.
Right.
And I think from that, I think to me, why I gravitate towards that, it creates a predictable outcome. And with that, I find it easier to have a predictable outcome.
Mm-hmm. Is that important in what you do?
Very important. Very important relative to our restaurants. Yeah. And I think in life in general, not that you can predict everything that's going to happen, but certainly want to be able to have a sense that mm-hmm. what is happening is going to be on the positive path and predictable.
That's excellent. We've been talking with John Sneddon, president of Rockland's Barbecue and Grilling Company. John, what's the website address?
www.rocklands.com.
Thank you, John. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin. For this segment, we have Elizabeth Wilder, CEO and President of Anthony Wilder Design Build. Elizabeth, what is Anthony Wilder Design Build?
Anthony Wilder Design Build is an architectural design, interior design, and construction company that services residential buildings predominantly.
And what's your role there?
I'm President and CEO.
And how'd you get the job?
I got the job when I met my husband at a 4th of July party.
So how long ago was that?
That was in 1993.
In 1993, and that's when the company was started too?
The company was started in 1990 by Anthony. And
so he took you in as a partner?
A life partner
and a business partner.
True.
Was that the intent all along?
No. I had a job.
What were you doing?
I was the director of information technology for a Blue Cross subsidiary.
So how did you make the transition from doing that into architecture and design build work?
I invested in the company and then felt that I needed to help lead the company so that we could design and build beautiful buildings.
You invested in the company. What do you mean you invested in the company? Your time, your energy?
Time, energy, and money.
So how did you decide to put money into a business that you'd actually never been in before, an industry you've never been in before? How did that work?
That's called falling in love.
With the business as well as your husband?
Yes, both, mm-hmm. actually.
So you must be a very trusting soul, I'm guessing.
I am.
And he recognized that as well, or did he kind of discourage you and say, no, it's better we just stay married?
Well, we weren't married at the time, so it was just better that you invest and help me get this thing running properly.
And what is it about you that gave you the confidence to think that I could help make this thing work?
I have a lot of business background and been fortunate and had a good early career and knew what it took to make something profitable.
And did your husband say that, recognize that as well?
I think so. Yeah, he's very creative, so I think he needed a cohort in making things work.
Mm-hmm. Looking back, or maybe it's something that's very much fresh in your mind, what's the thing that you bring that makes what you do so valuable to the company?
I think it's just bringing order to chaos and having systems and processes to a creative field.
And where did that first show up for you as a child?
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe in Catholic upbringing when you're required to be so orderly.
You think that's where it comes from?
I think there's a lot of organization that gets taught in Catholic school.
So you went to Catholic school.
Went to Catholic school.
What was Mom and Dad doing back then?
Mom was the secretary at the school, and Dad was a regional manager for a ladies' clothing store.
Huh. So who are you more like, Mom or Dad, right now?
I think I'm got a little of both, but I think I'm more like my mom.
And what's Mom's real gift and talent?
Gift and talent is having rules and procedures for things, but being kind.
So being kind, and I think you said earlier, kind and firm was the expression
yes.
you used. You learned that from Mom.
Yes.
So what does that have to do with business, if you will?
Oh, I think you've got to be both to have a successful company. You have to hold people accountable, and you also have to have a heart when you're dealing with people in the service business.
So is that what you bring to the organization?
Yes.
How many people did you say you had working there?
36.
36. So this is like a family to you?
Yes.
And yet you bring that firmness and that kindness.
Yes.
Does it work?
I think it works really well.
Huh. You guys make money too?
We do make money.
All right.
It's a requirement.
So this thing about, we'll come back to the order of things, if you will, and bringing making order out of chaos. Dad, you said, was working for Learner Shops?
Yes.
And he was a manager there?
Yes.
What do you remember about him as a kid growing up?
This, he was very hardworking and loyal and just had a very good work ethic.
Did you ever work with him?
I, unlike all my brothers, did not have the requirement of working at Learner Shops.
So you have several brothers?
Three older.
Three older, and they went into that business as well, or
no,
offshoots of it?
None of them went into that business, but they were all required to work there when we were growing up.
You use the word required to work. What did work represent for you kids?
If you wanted something, you had to earn the money to get it. You weren't just given things.
And so your dad kind of taught you that as well?
Yes.
So you had said something about him earlier that I guess it was he was driven and hardworking, and that's kind of what you took away from him.
Yes.
So does that show up for you in terms of how you lead as well?
Yes, I think I spent a lot of time at work, a little bit of a workaholic, but very dedicated and loyal.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect that of others as well?
Yes.
More so than you?
I don't know about that.
All right. So Mom and Dad are working. You have several older brothers, and you've taken these lessons from them. But you were first making money when, as a child?
I think it was helping my brothers deliver newspapers, but my first real job where I got a paycheck was working at a bakery.
A bakery?
A bakery.
What were you doing at a bakery?
I was working the counter.
Oh, okay. How old were you?
16.
16 years old, working the bakery because Mom and Dad said you had to go out and work. Do you want to earn your way?
If I wanted anything personal, I had to earn my own money to get it.
And so what were you doing with the money that you were earning working in the bakery?
I bought the stereo.
What stereo?
The Marantz stereo.
Wait,
that I really wanted.
You put it into a stereo system?
I put it into a stereo system.
Why
and then started saving.
What was it about the stereo system that holds so much significance for you?
I just love music.
So parents didn't say, no, you can't do that. You earned the money, you could do whatever you please with it?
Well, I had to save it to get it. So I was allowed to purchase it once I had all the funds.
So what did you learn about yourself in that first job?
I learned that that I was driven and that I was a good worker, and I liked working. Mm-hmm. I liked having a purpose, and I liked the interaction with people and all of that.
And does that somehow show up for you today in the way you lead or in your style or in what you expect of others? How does that show up for you?
I think it does. I mean, I think we have a good culture of people that want to be there, that are passionate about what they do, and enjoy each other and are self-managed, not needing somebody to babysit them nor micromanage them.
So you're not looking over everybody's shoulder, making sure they're doing what they're doing?
No.
Was somebody looking over yours back then in the bakery?
No, they were very trusting. In fact, they tried to hire me, yeah.
They tried to hire you?
Tried to hire me to stay on to run the bakery. They wanted to turn it over when I was 18, and I just didn't want to stay in El Paso.
Really? What did they see in you back then?
I think dedication, you know, willingness to do what it took to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. You said something earlier as well about growing up as a kid, it was all about saving the world. Can you explain that?
I think in the time frame when I grew up, there was just that your job was to help people. And I think that is why I have this need to help everybody and want the world to be successful. I think that's...
Why is that important?
I think it's what makes the world go around. I mean, I don't think any one of us is an island. I think we're all there to help each other.
Mm-hmm. But I always thought, and I've heard this from others, business is just about making money. You're telling me that it's actually bigger than that?
Much bigger.
How so? For you?
Well, when is enough enough? You know, if it's all just about making money, it's also about people and their lives, and your employees are as important as your clients. And I think it's exciting when we have great employees and have lots of fun together, and same with our clients.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else along the way that's had an influence on you?
I've had a lot of really good mentors mm-hmm. along the way. Linda Case is definitely one of the ones that stands out as I made a transition from the IT world into the remodeling world.
So how did she influence you?
Linda just was very kind and helped me understand what it took to be successful in this business, and introduced me to, you know, more people like Jack Stack and the open book management stuff, and Ari Weinzweig from Zingerman's, and just a lot of really good business practice people.
So something about you, though, let you to be open to that stuff, as opposed to, no, I know what I'm doing here, I've been doing this forever, don't tell me. So what is it about you that actually makes it possible to keep an open mind about those things?
Well, I think I'm always very curious. I don't feel like I always have all the answers. I think, you know, there's always room for improvement, not just for our processes and procedures, but for ourselves.
Is that a safe place to be for a CEO and a president of a company, to not know all the answers?
It's the best place to be.
How so?
Then you don't have to be the mommy of the organization. You can allow other people to step up and other people's ideas that may be much better than yours.
Hmm. So where does the satisfaction come in doing that?
The satisfaction comes in seeing our, you know, the projects that we build are beautiful, but also in the success of the people that are part of that. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of joy there.
Are you still in contact and working with Linda?
Linda has retired, but Remodelers Advantage is the organization, and it is still going and very strong and very good. Lots of good people in there.
So does she still have an influence on you?
Yes. I see Linda looking at me over her glasses with that stern look.
Stern?
It's stern.
But firm.
Stern, firm, and kind. But get it done.
That's wonderful. We've been speaking with Elizabeth Wilder, CEO and President of Anthony Wilder Design Build. Elizabeth, what's the website?
www.anthonywilder.com.
Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this business spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us for this segment is...
Gabrielle Jackson.
And Gabrielle, what's the name of your organization?
I am the founder and president of the Millennial Solution.
What is the Millennial Solution?
We are a company that helps other organizations be able to optimize their next generation talent, doing everything from consulting, team building, and communication techniques that actually work.
And next generation talent as in the millennials?
Absolutely.
And how'd you come up with this idea?
As a millennial myself, I'll go into companies and help them understand how to work with young people, how to get them to stick around longer, work harder, and not necessarily pay them more.
Well, we hear an awful lot about millennials. What makes you guys so different?
We are the next generation that is not only going to be flooding the workforce, but we're also your consumers. We're your employees of the future and your employees of today.
And I understand you've written an ebook on this whole thing about millennials. Is that true?
5 Millennial Myths, the Handbook to Managing and Motivating Millennials.
Real quick, tell us your favorite myth out of that book.
My favorite myth is that we are entitled, which is really just ambition misdirected. We're excited, we're ready to come and work for you, but you need to harness that energy to make us successful.
And where do you want this company to be in 5 years?
In 5 years, look like an international company where I'm helping organizations be able to work with that next generation.
And what do you like most about your job?
I love being able to connect generations. Cross collaboration is what I do. I get so much energy just from working with people of different ages, different backgrounds, coming together and making them successful.
And what's the website address?
www.millennialsolution.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Gabrielle Jackson, who has started a company called the Millennial Solution. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smoller. And for this segment, we've got Alan Strauss, Managing Partner of Startfinder. Alan, welcome. And what is Startfinder?
First of all, thank you. Startfinder is a management consulting, staffing, and recruitment outsourcing business.
And how'd you get started in it?
We started about 4.5 years ago. It's myself, my partner, Barry Smith, and then we have a team of about 5 internal folks, including my wife, who is also a very intricate part of our business as she manages our back office.
And
operations.
You mentioned you also had some contractors that work for you?
Yeah, and then we have about anywhere between any given any day between 25 and 35 contractors that work with our clients.
And what makes your company so different?
Yeah, well, we really have 2 distinct things that we think really differentiate Startfinder. One, first and foremost, is we do what we call the Startfinder difference, or we have what we call the Startfinder difference. Mm-hmm. And it's really myself and my partner just take things very seriously around doing business the right way. So we have a lot of confidence in the way our company is run and how we can help our clients. And what that does is that allows us to really have good, detailed conversations, sort of just like this, you know, with folks. And then we treat people like people, and we try to make really good decisions. And oftentimes, that costs us business. It's not a problem.
So I thought all businesses kind of do things the right way. Where does it show up in terms of making a significant difference in your relationship with your clients?
Absolutely. I mean, my partner and I, we talk, you know, we probably have conversations at least once a month about certain decisions we have to make, that there may be some sort of gray area, so to speak, that we see out there. And the basic rule of thumb is, if you have to ask and if you think there's a gray area, then you already know the answer.
Yeah.
That, you know, we just don't do it. And we turn down business all the time by just having a conversation with a client, or even in our staffing component when we have a candidate that's trying to take a job. We tell candidates sometimes, you know what, this probably isn't the right job for you, even at the cost of revenue. And we again, it goes down to this confidence that we know we're doing things the right way, and that, you know, we know business will come. We know we're going to be happy running the company this way, and that's what we do.
So where does this do the right thing come from for you growing up? Where did you grow up?
I grew up partially in Long Island, New York, and then I moved here when I was 13 to the Maryland. I should say here is the Maryland area with my parents transferred. My father got a job out in the D.C. area.
So they picked up you, and you have any other brothers or sisters?
I have an older brother, 4 years older than me.
So the both of you kind of picked you up and said, we're moving.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough time. My father was actually out of work for a little bit, and he found a great opportunity with a company out here. Yep, so we moved when I was 13, and my brother was probably about 17.
So how does a 13-year-old relate to the fact that, you know, dad's out of work, and we've got to move? What's that like?
Yeah, it was just, you know, looking back, I don't think I even understood it the right way. I think my father is great. One of the great things about my father is that you never worry about my dad. He is a rock. So you just don't, I didn't realize what he probably was going through at the time, because I never saw it. Like, I didn't even know there was really any problems.
So I don't remember. All kind of shielded from that.
Exactly. He's very guard. Like, you know, you really have to pin. You really have to poke him to get an issue, to get some problem from my dad. Otherwise, he'll go on. You'll never know. I mean, he just goes on with his, you know, with his life.
Mm-hmm. So, when you think back to that time in particular, perhaps, what did you learn from your dad? I mean, I get the idea he was a rock, but how does a 13-year-old or even older interpret that and incorporate it into their being?
Yeah, I think what I really learned from my dad is also just being really even, two things, even being even keel in life, you know, really understanding that there's me ups and downs and really just trying to take it in as it goes. Mm-hmm. And the second thing that I think is really something that I learned from him is to be, is just, you know, is that he gets pleasure from little things in life. You know, he goes out and plays golf, and when he used to smoke cigars, he would smoke a cigar. He doesn't do that anymore. And he just would, you know, I could see he just gets pleasure from little things.
Mm-hmm. So how are you like him in that respect?
Oh, I'm very much like him both those ways. You know, I definitely am an even keel type person. I definitely, you know, try to take, you know, you try to enjoy the things that go well, but really the best part is that you just don't keep going. Don't get hung up on the things that go bad.
So if I were having a conversation with Barry, your partner.
Yeah.
How would he say that shows up in the way you all lead the organization or in your relationship with him?
I think he'd say it shows up daily as whenever, because we talk, you know, all the time. We talk daily, obviously. And, you know, I think that the biggest thing is that we're both really good at that, like not getting too full of ourselves. Uh-huh. You know, we've been fortunate enough to win a couple of awards. Like we're in the 500 fastest growing company list. We're Washington Business Journal top 25 staffing company in the area. And, mm-hmm. you know, we really don't take it that seriously. I mean, we kind of, it's great. We want it. It's good for business, but we move on and we don't really, you know, other than getting this interview with you, I think that's the first thing that's really happened. That's great.
Yeah. So when you take me back to mom, what was mom doing?
My mom worked mostly, you know, once I was about 10 years old, and she still does to this day, which is very admirable. I mean, she started working in a pharmacy, and now she's actually a personal shop at a large retail chain, and she still works, and she does fantastic. I mean, she's a top producer.
So you were young, about 10 years old, and she was working
retail, yeah. You mentioned. Yeah, I was a latchkey kid. But my brother's around too a lot, so that helped. But
growing up, I mean, what was your mom like, and what did you actually learn from her?
But my mom actually was, I mean, I think what in general I definitely learned from her and the rest of my family too is that our family is like the type of family where we don't really talk about much about our feelings or how we really care about each other, but it's just known. If I had all of a sudden had to drive, go somewhere to Chicago tomorrow at 4:30 a.m., I can call any of them. And really, you know, my wife and as well as like this, and even my father-in-law is a very big influence in my life. Any of these people all have the same thing where they would show up at 4:25. You know, they'd all line up to show up, and there's no reason given. Even if I didn't have to give a reason, they wouldn't ask me. They say, no problem. We'll be there at 4:25, wherever you need to go.
That's unspoken, you say.
It's not all unspoken. Yeah, it is. It's a very interesting dynamic, and I feel the same way about them. Like, you know, we all would do anything for each other, and it's just not talked about. It's just assumed. Yeah. It's a given.
Can you think of any reason why that is the way it is for you? Was there somebody or something that happened that kind of made that so evident growing up?
You know, I think it's just the fact that I really can't. It's just there. And I think everyone, again, it's just sort of like, you know, how, like the best way to say it is like it's like a given where, you know, it's just there and we move on. Like it's assumed it's there and we move on.
But you don't know it until something happens, like when you guys moved or had to move.
Yes. Yeah. We just moved. It wasn't spoken. Yeah. Yeah. We moved. I mean, it was tough. It was difficult, but we all moved and we didn't really look back.
Yeah. So your mom worked. I guess you mm-hmm. framed it as retail that way, and your dad.
I'm not going to give you her age, but she's still working and doing great.
No need to. And dad was in the commodities business until he transferred here, or was he doing that here?
He was doing both. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was an operations manager.
Did you ever need or want for anything growing up?
Yeah. I mean, we were very middle class. So, and I actually, looking back, you know, I was always looking. I think, you know, I was a little bit materialistic, and I probably wanted more, you know, just things, money, nicer cars, nicer things. Mm-hmm. But nothing, but looking back now, I mean, nothing in the key areas of life or you know, nothing that I wouldn't have changed a thing. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What were you doing when you were young to make money? What was the first paying job you had there?
First paying job I had when I was 14 years old. I was at a golf country club cleaning golf clubs for about a couple months. And then I had various jobs after that. I was a camp counselor. I worked at retail. I worked in a restaurant for 5 years.
Mom and dad make you do that?
No, not at all. I mean, my parents were very laissez-faire that way. I wanted to work. That was the one thing. I was a very average student, but I always did well in my jobs.
You always did well in your jobs, mm-hmm. even though you were an average student. I'm not sure that the two really even
crossed. No, they're not. But I mean, the point is that I always was good at work. And whereas education, I never really took my education seriously, which I regret now. But
you did.
Yeah, I didn't take it seriously.
You said something earlier during the green room about you paid for college for yourself.
Yes.
Can you kind of share with us why was that important for you?
You know, I paid it all on a credit card.
Literally.
Well, literally.
Figuratively speaking.
No, literally. I put it up, right, and then paid it off the credit card for years afterward. luckily, back then, colleges didn't cost like it does now. But you know, it's interesting because it was really interesting when we talked about that dialogue because I was thinking back. My parents never really talked about who would pay for college. I just felt like it was the right thing to do. It's my education. You know, I kind of wanted to pay for it. You know, looking back now, I didn't really realize that how important it was to me.
And they didn't say anything to you, say, no, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it.
They might have, you know, to be honest, I don't remember. They might have. I'm sure they would have if they could have. Again, I think also college, now I'm just thinking, that was a little financially difficult time for the family. I think my father was starting business. It didn't go that well, what he planned. And so I think that was sort of also part. I was like, you know what? I didn't even want to ask for it. You know, part of that whole thing, we just did things. You know, we didn't
do the right thing and do the right thing.
So I just pay for it. It's like, no big deal. Well, I'll pay for it eventually. I knew I'd make money eventually. Uh-huh. And I'll pay for it.
You said that was actually one of your proudest moments as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's just the fact it's an ongoing moment because I didn't just write one check. But it's the fact that there's I'm very proud of the fact that I paid for school and I worked full time during college for the most part. I think I worked probably at least 30 to 40 hours a week my sophomore, junior, and senior years.
So if you pull a lesson out of that, what's the lesson you pull out of it that you learned that still shows up for you now in how you lead the organization?
That absolutely, I think Barry and I have a feeling of like, you know, we are a meritocracy. We want to be a meritocracy and that we believe that, you know, you got to put in effort in all your roles with Startfire. You know, effort isn't critical. And we did it because Barry is the same way. He didn't come from means either. And you know, he actually was writing software in high school. Mm-hmm. He and so forth. So
same theme here. It's,
absolutely.
It's about getting it done.
Getting it done. Thank you. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Alan. We've been speaking with Alan Strauss, managing partner of StartFinder. What's the website address, Alan?
It's www.startfinder, StartFinder.com.
Thank you. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show, including Rebecca Rubin, founder, president, and CEO of Marstel Day LLC, Elizabeth Wilder, CEO and president, Anthony Wilder, Design Build, John Sneddon, president, Rocklands Barbecue and Grilling Company, and Alan Strauss, managing partner, StartFinder. I'd like to thank our my co-host at times here, Joe Applebaum of Potomac Companies, for helping me with the interviews and hopefully delivering to our listening audience an entertaining and educational show. And I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. You can also hear this program again at businesstalkradio.net. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.